And Paul, or rather Peter, called prophecy a light that shineth in a dark place. And this vision, or rather dream, that Nebuchadnezzar had, as far as the order of earthly things are concerned, it's the ABC of prophecy, the image that he saw in the vision. And it is interesting that back towards the beginning of Israel's existence, they had Joseph, an interpreter of dreams, and here at the end of their kingdom, they have Daniel. And God can usually find a man that he can use. And he had Daniel at this time, and he gave him supernatural insight. And he calls in the 19th verse, he refers to the God of heaven. Again in the 28th verse, this is particularly the name of God in some of the captivity books, and it's also used once in the book of Revelation. God of heaven. He had lived in Jerusalem and in the temple. You remember that Daniel prayed toward that temple later, as we will read. But now God had abandoned the temple, and they thought of him as a god in heaven. Now, there was probably never a monarch exactly like Nebuchadnezzar. God gave him his kingdom, and once he calls him his servant, and is compared with all the other monarchies, he was the head of gold. And he had absolute authority. He wasn't controlled by any laws like the Medes or Persians. He was an absolute sovereign. Killed when he wanted to, and he promoted when he wanted to, and he didn't ask anybody. And then Daniel went in and made his request. Now we came down to this point in our last lesson, that they be spared and that he would show him the dream. I suppose God had spoken to him. And he prayed. God revealed him the secret. And when Arioch went in before the king in verse 25, he took all the credit. I have found a man, but this is interesting, of the captives of Judah. He might have said, Your Royal Highness, you're the greatest man in the world, but here's a slave. He's going to tell you what you want to know. It does pay to walk with God. It's almost like, but even Joseph was worse. Joseph was in a dungeon, pit. That word means a pit. Like a cistern. And when they brought him out to come before Pharaoh, and it was also in connection with a dream. And I'm sure you have noticed in the scriptures that when God gets ready, he has a way of making the man prominent that he wants to be made prominent, like David and Joseph, and now Daniel, one of the slaves, Your Honor. And the king asked Daniel about it. Are you able? And it gave Daniel a chance to testify. Now, I know a young man, or he was a young man, he's not anymore. He could never hold down a place anywhere as a pastor. And I asked his original pastor about him one time, and he said he perpetually projects himself instead of the Lord. Well, Daniel said this, The secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. The dream and the vision of thy head upon thy bed are these. Nebuchadnezzar wondered about the future. He said, You wondered what should come to pass. And then he said, As for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes it shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Now, I will tell you that no man by nature has power to penetrate the future. A man lent me a book. A minister lent me a book. I believe the fellow's name that was in it was named, I believe his name was Case, Edward Case or something like that. And he could put himself into a trance and have visions. And when he brought the book back to me, he said, What do you think about it? I said, That man had a familiar spirit. And there are just two powers. One of them is the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, and the other one is the spirit of God. And I was in a group of ministers in Weston one time, and we were talking about a man that appeared on television. They claimed he could look at a nail and bend it. And I said, Well, brethren, there are just two powers, and what do you suppose that would be? God isn't in the business of running around bending nails. And what would it benefit anybody to bend a nail? Now, This dream shows the whole context of the times of the Gentiles from their beginning to their end. And now this dream would enable them to think as God thought. Jeremiah had repeated the statement about a 70-year captivity, that they were going to be in subjection to Nebuchadnezzar. He didn't tell them a lot beyond that. And now Daniel is permitted through the interpretation of the dream to see that they're going to continue to be subject to other people, though restored to their land. Thou sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. I didn't look up that word terrible. I wish now that I had. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass. Now you may have thought just on a casual reading that all the legs were wrong, but this says his belly and his thighs were brass. His legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them, and the stone was smote the image, became a great mountain, and filled the whole earth. I thought, when no place was found for them, of Satan in the 12th chapter of Revelation, his place in heaven. There was found no place for him in heaven anymore. That will come. Now he said, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Now most of this image is history. And one of the great proofs of history, and Isaiah cites this, the Lord said, the former things have come to pass, and I declare new things. You've seen old prophecies come to pass. Now I'm going to tell you some new things that are going to come to pass. That's what God said through Isaiah. Now in the 37th verse we read, Thou, O King, art a King of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. When you read such statements as this, it may shock you a little bit. We will learn in the 4th chapter that the heavens do rule and setteth over the earth the basest of men. That's a strong statement, isn't it? And in the 13th chapter of the book of Romans, we read, The powers that be are ordained of God. Now, when Paul made that statement, the iron legs were there. The Roman government, cruel, harsh, dominant, absolutely demanding, murdered many Christians because they demanded worship from the Christians, and the Christians wouldn't give it. And yet Paul said, The powers that be are ordained of God. And he said to Nebuchadnezzar, The God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom. Now, you see, we could bring up this question. There was a man around by the name of Daniel. Why didn't God give it to him? Why didn't God give it to one of the three Hebrew children? Why didn't he give it to Ezekiel? Well, among other reasons, I will tell you, the times of the Jews had come to an end, and it was time for the Gentiles to have dominion over the Jews. And Jesus alone uses the expression, times of the Gentiles. We are yet, nationally speaking, in the times of the Gentiles, and the fullness of the Gentiles has not come in yet. That is religious, used by Paul in Romans. Wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven, hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. Now, God, whether this man took charge of all the tribes of the earth or not, is beside the point. God gave it to him if he wanted to. I suppose that after a while, a fellow gets about everything he wants. If a man were working for gold and suddenly Fort Knox was turned over to him, he might think, well, I don't need any more gold. Nebuchadnezzar was more interested in building than in conquering. Though he conquered far and wide, but he conquered because God gave it to him to conquer. There was a Sennacherib invaded Judah once, and he boasted about what all he had conquered, and he had destroyed their gods. And when Isaiah spoke, he said, It was the Lord that did it. He said they were like the grass on the housetop, you know, those clay-topped houses, and the grass had come up, the rain didn't come, they died quickly. And it was God that allowed him to do it. And when he took the glory to himself, God destroyed him by an angel. And when we get to the 4th chapter of this book, we'll see Nebuchadnezzar being brought down, and believe me, he was brought down. bestial insanity to punish his pride. But notice again that God gave it to him, and with this man began the times of the Gentiles, and until 1948, the Jews have been pretty well dominated by the Gentiles. We trust and hope with all of our hearts that this is the time of their gathering back, though in unbelief that it is the time. They are a nation. They can make a covenant now with a man. If the beast should appear on the scene, he can make a covenant with them, and they are in a position to do so. But as yet, we're in what God calls the times of the Gentiles. And I repeat, Nebuchadnezzar was its first king, had the first monarchy. There was Nebuchadnezzar, and I speak from the Bible, Nebuchadnezzar, an evil Merodach, not mentioned in this book, mentioned in Jeremiah. And then later we'll read of Belshazzar. And during his reign, he was killed, and the Medes and Persians took the kingdom. Now we read of the second kingdom. After thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. Now this second kingdom was the kingdom that under which Ezra and Nehemiah and Malachi and Zechariah and Haggai ruled. And it was the second kingdom that released the Jews to go back to their land. And then there would come another kingdom. Each metal is of less value, but it is also stronger than the one that went before. There shall rise a third that shall bear rule over all the earth. That is, it was given to them to do so. Now that, of course, was the Grecian kingdom. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron. For as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. Now in this section, we're seeing Gentile power as man views it. My, doesn't it look magnificent? Look at the colleges. Look at the museums. Look at the air forces. Look at the wealth. Look at the agricultural system. Don't they look wonderful? When we get to the seventh chapter, we'll see it from God's viewpoint. A lion, a leopard, a bear, an unnameable beast. When thou sawest the feet and toes part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay. Many believe it will be democracies mixed with monarchies, absolute dictatorships, and then some, like England has a monarchical democracy. And others have thought it would be religious and secular. I rather lean to the democratic monarchical form. As the toes of feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings, I feel that these kings means the ten toes. Now, it seems as though the ten toes here answer to the ten kings of Revelation, because the ten horns on the head of the beast in the seventh chapter, three of them are plucked up, leaving only seven, perhaps the seven heads of Revelation 13. And in those days, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. It shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. The dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Now let's think of the kingdoms for just a moment. We know what Babylon is. Daniel said to Nebuchadnezzar, "Thou art this head of gold." We don't have to wonder. This kingdom lasted from the time it conquered the Jews 70 years. I read to you from Jeremiah the other day that Jeremiah said they would serve him and his son and his son's son until his time came, and then many nations would serve themselves of him. I believe that's in the 29th chapter, one of the references. Thus saith the Lord, I'm reading the 10th verse, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in in causing you to return to the place. And there are other references to it, but in the sixth chapter, well, let's read the latter part of the fifth chapter. The 30th verse, in that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Now that's the second, that's the silver. And then in the eighth chapter, there is another vision. And here the two creatures that are used are a ram and a goat. And the angel mentions, I won't come to my mind whether that's in the 8th chapter or the 10th chapter. It's in the 10th chapter. The 20th verse says, knowest thou whereof I come unto thee, and now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia, and when I am gone forth, the prince of Grecia shall come. Now these are heavenly personalities. Greece was the third kingdom, and then we won't turn to it, but in the second chapter of the book of Luke, well, maybe we'd better turn to that too. There was another power. The four kingdoms into which Greece had broken up had been conquered by another power. And in this second chapter of the book of Luke, we read, came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. That's the fourth world empire, and we don't even have to go outside the Bible to see who they are. And as far as outward appearance is concerned, the Roman Empire has passed. Yet the names are carried on, the Caesars. We don't hear these words anymore, but the Tsar. How many of you remember what the German ruler was called in the First World War? Kaiser, Tsar, Caesar, all came from that same word. And as far as outward appearance is concerned, it has perished. Incidentally, there's a lot more of it around than most people realize. But we will learn when we get to the, well, we have it in a sense here, when we get to the 7th chapter, and when we get to the 11th chapter, and when we get to Revelation 13, we will see that it will be back in power and back in force again, cold, brutal, and deadly as ever. Making war on the saints, as we learn in the 7th chapter, and again in the 13th chapter of Revelation. And so this is the picture of the Gentile powers, and it will end when a stone cut out without hands hits the image on the feet. It will come suddenly. I like the book of Revelation. In fact, if you can love something as inanimate, I love the book of Revelation. When I see a great personality coming back from heaven on a white horse and capturing the beast and the false prophet and throwing them in the lake of fire. And then to see him back in the 10th chapter of Revelation, putting one foot on the land and one foot on the sea, there pictured as a mighty angel, and swearing by God that there should be time or delay no longer. And seeing him elsewhere, hearing the great voices in the 11th chapter, that the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ. And in the 6th chapter, seeing the great personalities, military leaders crawling in the caves and the rocks and asking to be hidden from the wrath of him that sitteth upon the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Now, I'm not glad people are going to be under wrath, but I am glad that he's going to come and take charge of things. But you will notice that that's the way things end. There will be the stone cut out without hands, and it will smite the image on the feet, and then everything will disappear. My, what a change there's going to be in the world. The educational system will change. There won't be any more debates about whether you teach creationism or evolutionism. There won't be any debates about whether to close the taverns or about the dope smugglers, and he won't judge after the hearing of the ear, the seeing of the eye. He will judge because he will know everything. And things will change rapidly. There will be a great time of chaos, utter chaos. Remember, did you ever notice how much is said about the destruction of the beast in the scriptures? It's in Daniel. It's even in Thessalonians. Whom the Lord shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. And I beheld till the beast was slain and his body given to the burning flame. And then in Revelation he said to be captured alive. Well, that answers to a death, so much space given to his death and his ending. And suddenly, every leader on the earth is going to be gone. The 10 kings of Revelation 17, the 7 heads, the 10 horns, that covers the kings, of course. The beast himself, the false prophet that caused so many people to hope and look to him, suddenly there will just be chaos. Can you imagine what it would be like in America if suddenly every general and every governor and the president and all the cabinet were suddenly killed and every official was dead and all the leaders of the transportation systems were gone, the trains wouldn't travel, the planes wouldn't fly, the buses wouldn't run? It would look like starvation, but there won't be too many people to starve. It will be awful. But anyway, that's the way it will come to an end. Now, this is how God spoke to Nebuchadnezzar the first time. And like lots of other things, I remember two little girls, and they didn't get too many compliments. The father said to one of them one day, "Now, look here, little lady, I'm going to give you a whipping." Instead of being put down, she turned to her sister and said, "I'm a little lady because Daddy said it was." Well, this ruler said, I'm that head of gold. I'll do something about it. No repentance. He exalted Daniel, commanded that they offer an offering to him, and he acknowledged that his God was a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets. And I appreciate Daniel. He made him a great man, but Daniel didn't ask for anything for himself. He asked for his friends. He made him the chief governor of Babylon, and then he requested, and he put Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Somebody say that was politicking, nepotism.